Welcome, everyone, to the Star City Murders podcast. My name is Axel. With me is our producer and star, Heath Sentazzo. And we're doing this little intro just to let you know that a lot of these podcasts were recorded a long time ago, right, Heath?
Yeah, back in 2020, when we first started pre-production, we started the Star City Murders companion podcast, mostly for our Kickstarter backers. When we were raising money for the film. So we're releasing those now so you can hear them. The public can hear them, right, Axel?
Yeah.
And we're going to be recording new pods too.
Yeah, we're going to get some new interviews. And as things go down, new news comes out. We just want to update everyone, make sure everyone's pre-ordering, ordering, and whenever you're listening to this, watching the Star City Murders. So stay tuned. We're going to be releasing them. We'll probably drop a couple, then wait a week, drop maybe one or two more. And then as we get to the wide release here on VOD, we will start recording new pods. And you can get a behind-the-scenes look from the people who made the movie.
Yeah, and right now you can pre-order it on iTunes, the Star City Murders on Apple TV and iTunes. And also April 16th is our release date. We'll be on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, of course, many satellite and cable providers. So you're going to have a chance to rent or buy the Star City Murders. And a lot of people have pre-ordered. So we've been doing pretty well in the bestseller list on Apple TV. So that's exciting. But I'm really looking forward, Axel, now that we got distribution and the movie's coming out, to get some of the cast on and creators and just start talking about this phase of the process.
Yep. It's going to be awesome. So enjoy the show, everyone. Stay subscribed. Check out Star City Murders. Pre-order it. Watch it. Be a part of it, baby.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star City Murders podcast. This is podcast episode 7. It's been a while. I'm your host today, Heath Sentazzo, creator of the Star City Murders. Axel cannot join us this week, but my partner in crime, the man who has made this movie with me, and we're going to update you on everything that's happened since our last pod, which is a lot of stuff. My executive producer, Jeffrey Chili Mertz. How you doing, buddy?
Chili in the house. How you doing? Good to talk to you, Heath.
sounds like we never talked before. Like,
we talked all the time. I'll tell you what, back in the 90s when the internet wasn't even a thing yet, people would just call up on the phone and send letters through the post office. It's crazy. And now we talk all the time. We text, you know, we get on a phone, we chat, we email, we do all this stuff. It's just incredible how the world has changed since Al Gore invented the internet. It's amazing.
It really is. And it helped us make this movie. Technology definitely helped us because, you know, during production, a lot of times you were home in Colorado, but, you know, you were able to do a lot of things from there. I mean, if we were doing this in the late 80s, early 90s, you had to pick up and move to LA for like three
weeks. Oh, it probably wouldn't have happened, really. You know, everybody was on site and going to locations and having, you know, all the people involved and the crafties and all the producers and the actors. And now everybody's spread out. You can do so many things remote now. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's what a process. It is pretty amazing. So
in the digital world, you know, you can do all kinds of stuff in different places in the world and put it all together. And like, no one would even know that's watching the film where it happened.
Wow. As Tom Cruise said in A Few Good Men, I'm sexually aroused, Commander.
Did you ever think of that though before? You could do ADR half a country away and no one would even know the difference.
Yeah, no, that, and it happens. And who knows, we might have to do Probably not, but.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, listeners. We don't, you don't, might not know what ADR is. And I just found out recently myself. So,
well, yeah, typically if you're new to the business, ADR, pretty much after you shoot, record, you know, your film and audio, sometimes a line might not come out right, or it's too windy. So sometimes you have to re-record lines, and they basically call it ADR, where we get the actors in the studio. You kind of look at the scene you're going to re-record, and you kind of try to match it up. Sometimes you can really tell, especially on TV shows. There's times where you're like, oh yeah, it was windy that day. All that stuff on the rooftop is ADR'd or Foley'd. But you know, it's part of movie making. I'm actually ADR and Jeff right now. He's not even here. I'm just playing sound bits. Right? No?
Well, this kind of reminds me of the 70s Kung Fu movies, right?
Oh, yeah. Those Bruce Lee movies. So, all right. So it's been a while since we did a pod. And just to get everyone caught up where we're at now. So we had scheduling issues and a lot of things happened once we wrapped the film and after the holiday. So the beginning of 2021, there was a lot of work that needed to be done. And unfortunately, our editor, Nick Simonis, one of our executive producers, had to step down. He just got really busy with work. He's an Emmy nominated editor. And he's just like, listen, I can help you. As much as I can, but I'm going to have to bow out. So we ended up getting some new editors, Miguel Almedo and Angel Sanchez, that has worked with our director, Giles Andrews, who you heard on this podcast a few episodes ago. And but before that, Giles did his own cut. He did like a, what do you call it, like an assembly edit, but a little more with some, you know, camera angles, different shots put in. He did that. We went over that. And then when Miguel and Angel came on board, we did about two more cuts. And then eventually what happened this summer, we locked picture. So what's the next step when we lock picture? We'll just talk picture right now. We had to find a colorist. And Jeff, what is a colorist?
The colorist.
If you want me to answer.
Something no one ever really thinks about, okay? You take raw footage and you have to even out the tones and the mood and the style of the film. It's just not, you know, shoot stuff like on a camera or a home movie camera or a iPhone and just play it back and you say, oh yeah, I took this video of my kids at their recital or whatever. It's so much more complicated than that. They have to look at each and every scene and make sure it matches and the mood's the same and the highlighting and the whole overall, you know, I can't think of another word, but colorization. So everything kind of flows together. It doesn't look like you've taken shots from your backyard and your front porch and your inside of the house and putting it all together, and you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, he was in the backyard, there's sun, he was on the porch, there's shade, he was inside, it's incandescent lighting. You have to make the all three scenes look pretty much the same. And it's an amazing process. And I never even thought about it before. And if you ever want to, you know, slow down the end of the movie credits and look for people who do editing and coloring and sound and all these things. There's just a lot of work that goes into it that people take for granted. So that's my two bits on the coloring aspect of it.
Yeah. I knew we had to do it because, you know, when we're doing the movie, we're seeing raw footage and we're like, oh, that's bright. And it's like, oh, it'll get fixed in post, you know, the common line. And then it was like,
well, Giles was great. He put together that raw output and you looked at it and you're like, really? We spent money on a 6K camera and this is what it looks like. but it's more than that. It's raw footage and you get all of the details from all the different scenes. And they don't all fit together. And that's where the master Jim comes in to colorize
yes.
it and make it look like you were really there.
I mean, honestly, it looks like a multi-million dollar movie after he was done with it. So Jim Spadoni, our Italian brother, would you find him on Craigslist or like?
I found him through Guido and his cousin Bolini.
Oh yeah,
we all got together one day in the garage and we put it all together and said, "Let's go to Jimmy."
What are you? You sound like an Armenian mobster. I don't know what that was. Frank Zappa, something.
Jim Spadoni is a man, and found him on. There's a great site called Production Hub, and shout out to them.
Not Pornhub, Production Hub.
No, Production Hub.
Oh yeah, okay.
Keith, come on now. This is a family show.
It is.
As Axel says,
I'm sure my family is listening. And okay, yes.
Production Hub is an amazing website. You can find all kinds of film related talent, and it could be anywhere from all the different producers and accounting and legal and all the set designers, all that. They all post information up there and you can find them, and they have ratings, and you can find out, how many times people have hired them and what their skills are, how long they've been in the industry and whatnot. And Jim popped out to me a couple of times, and you can also search by area, the world. But I limited to the California area, and Jim's name popped up more than once. And I was like, I got to try and contact this guy. There's something about him that's, it's like, I don't know, some kind of karma or whatever you want to call it. But
well, Jeff, his
picture was phenomenal.
I got to
meet this guy.
Think about the people we've got on this project to work with us. I mean, the actors, the crew, the creators, now in post. You're right. When we met him on the Zoom, we interviewed him. It was like exactly, he had that vibe like of what we were looking for right away. And we've been lucky on this production to have people like that. They're very blessed with some hard, passionate workers. And once I met him, I knew. I mean, we both knew right away. I was like, this is our guy. He just answered all the right questions. He's a good looking man. But no, he was just down to earth and was very passionate about doing this. And that's exactly who we needed in this case. And he's damn good at what he does.
He had some credentials behind him. And he did a couple of indie films, but a lot of, a lot of corporate stuff, commercials and different types of smaller, movies, for lack of better words. But he had one or two indie credits behind him. And I thought, you know what? He knows what we're after. He knows we're low budget, and let's give him a try. And, maybe he can bring some talent to this. And I was amazed by how stoked he was when he saw the raw footage and really wanted to be a part of this production. Something clicked with him.
Right.
With the clips that I sent him, and after our initial interview, and he was like, "Man, I really want to be a part of this project." And when you find somebody like that, I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah, and honestly, Jim went above and beyond what we expected. He gave us, because originally it was going to be done. A turnaround was going to be within a couple of weeks. Get it done, do a couple passes. But he really sat down with Giles, especially, and really went into detail to fix certain scenes, adjust things. Because what happened was Jim did a pass, and then he put a certain color grade on one of our scenes. I believe it was in the ME office where it's...
it was the morgue. It was the morgue scene, yeah.
The morgue. And yep. Giles is like... That look, I like that look. What did you do there? And he got Giles very excited. And he's like, "Oh, I just did this and that." And he goes, "Can we make the whole movie look like that?" And and it just was like what he did there just inspired Giles, and the two of them just decided to go forth and go with this look. And it just, I mean, I have put on the Kickstarter in the Twitter, some snapshots of some of the stuff, and it just, I mean, the film, I mean, I know it's our film, but it's gonna elevate it above a lot of indie films. I kind of say, what do I say? Like, indie films are the really okay ones, but independent films are the ones that are good. I think this is going to make it an independent, but you know, above and beyond that, I mean, it makes it look so good. And I've met Jim a bunch of times. He actually lives in Oceanside, California, where me and my wife got married. So I love Oceanside. So he lived there. So I've been down a few times, and me and Giles went a few.
See, there's the whole Kevin Bacon connection thing, right?
Yes.
I didn't even know you got married in Oceanside, and we find a guy who lives in Oceanside.
He lives in Oceanside. It was meant to be.
It was unbelievable.
And, you know, I've been to Jim's home, and he's just his lovely wife. And it was just, I'm glad, because we just made another friendship and another business associate. Like, he'll be coloring our next film. I guarantee it. Jim's our guy. And so, yeah. And once, because I know with you, Chili, when we first saw the raw footage, you were kind of like, okay, I know it's going to get colored, but you were a little like hesitant, like, what's going on? Why doesn't this match?
And oh, then, I remember that. Oh my that? Gosh. I thought it was almost awful. but I didn't know the process, and I didn't know the technical work that goes into these things. And mm-hmm. It was amazing. I want to rewind a little bit back to the morgue scene with that. I don't want to give it away, but that greenish kind of darkish chilly, not chilly me,
chilly
chill
okay,
like chill, like cold, that when you walk into an office and you kind of feel that presence, like there's death here. Now I'm getting deep, but anyway, you weren't on that call, unfortunately, and I was on the call with Giles and Jim when that came up, and I was just totally blown away by the way it looked. And Giles' reaction when we saw that clip, and I was like, okay, something's clicking here. We've got it. And Jim and Giles made that connection, and it's been awesome ever since. So, and you know, it wasn't easy. And Jim said, when you mentioned, can you do this for the rest of the film? And Jim was like, I'm pretty sure I can do it. There's going to be some challenges. And like I mentioned earlier, you've got the interiors, and you've got the bright scenes, and you've got, you know, the car in the driveway and stuff like that. And, you know, not to spoil anything for the listeners, but when you put all those things together and try and blend them to look the same, it's not an easy task. And that's where Jim the Master came in.
Yeah.
I think we've got it. There's a couple things that I know. Giles and Jim are both perfectionists, and which was good in a way and bad because things take longer, but they finally got to probably that 98%+ where, yep, this is it. And this is the film, and this is how we want it to look, and the viewers are going to love it.
Yeah. And honestly, like, and for the listeners and the backers, I know, like, when you have a crap load of money, post-production will usually take about a year. When you have little money like we do, I guess it's about a year and a half. It's really since this summer, it's really gone fast pace. Once we got the right players, you know, in line and hired the right people, it was almost like, okay. And this has been my philosophy, and we'll get to sound and music and what's going on with that. But our philosophy, like Giles, myself, Jeff, and Mike, our other investor, we want to get this film done. We want to get it done, get it out there so we can show everyone and see where we can get distribution, et cetera. But we reached a point where we got some amazing people involved, Miguel and Angel, Jim, Greg Cathcart and his team that are doing the sound editing. And then our new composer, Chris. And it's like, okay, we have something special brewing. Let's not rush it. And once Giles saw what Jim was doing, Giles changed his tune because he knew, you know, you get like, I'm in the middle because, you know, I got you and Mike, our money men. I got Giles, my creator, and I'm at the point where my acting's done, so I'm producing. And I'm like, I want to get a good balance because I want to get this film done by the end of the year. But at the same time, I don't want to lose the creative balance. And then once, honestly, you know, God, this is going to be the Jim Love Fest. But once Jim started creating the look for the film, like Giles even said to me, he's like, well, I mean, what's an extra couple of months to get this right versus trying to just get it done? And I know a lot of people have been waiting and they don't either don't understand the business or they're like, why is it taking so long? There's so much that goes into post-production, production, everything. I mean, it's been a 3-year process, but this is our first film. And, you know, we had to, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. And so we had to really be smart. And luckily we got some great people to work on this film. So it got to a point where, like you know, as I say at the beginning of the podcast, sounds like we never talk. I was making a funny joke there because we talk all the time. Me and Jeff are like, he's like my best friend and my business partner. We're like attached at the hip from Colorado to California. But we're just like, you know what? Let's get this right because this is our coming out party. This is our film. And we had so many issues that we had to overcome. So why not do it right? What's an extra couple of months in the whole grand scheme of things? So, you know, and we blame Jim for that because he did such a damn good job and got our director really excited.
So. Well, man, I just had so many thoughts cross my mind. I don't know where to go back to. I mean, joined at the hip. If I had Kardashian hips, yeah, we'd be joined.
I was thinking of the Matt Damon, Greg Kinnear movie, the adjoining twins. Anyway, go ahead.
But seriously, we thought we were going to make a movie. All right, we thought we were going to make a decent movie, but as you described. When we started pulling in this talent and things that dragged on longer than they should have, but it allowed us to kind of put it together the right way. And the more it got put together and the more people that got on board, it's turned into something bigger than I ever thought it was. And it's not just, you know, a first movie that kids do out of college. And, you know, right. when you watch it, you can tell.
I've done a few of those, Jeff.
You have, Big Tony. But what was I going to say? As it goes, the disadvantage is it's dragging on, right? It's been, you know, almost 3 years. The advantage to that is we've grown and we've seen what we can do with it. And it actually has evolved from just this is our first movie into this is a really damn good production.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even though it's taken a long time, I think it's also an advantage in some respect is that it allowed us to find the right people to develop the story. Okay. You know, the story has changed since the original script.
Killer Rats
and Bourbon. It allowed us to get some really good talent for the characters. Which we may not have gotten if we would have just pushed this through.
Right.
And then back to the Jim Love story, you know, this, you know, Google searching and found a really great guy to color this and to make it look and feel the way we really wanted it to feel. And probably 2 years ago, it wouldn't have looked like this. So, no. So there's some benefits to that. I wish it was done. You know, last year, I wish COVID wasn't here. And,
yeah.
But we would probably not have hired the actors we would have hired. They wouldn't have been available. So, you know, there's a lot of good things that are coming out of this.
100%.
You know, despite how long it's taken. You know, anyway, we're cheap, yeah. But, you know, having a bunch of money up front and doing it all big bang, you get what you get. You drag it out a little bit. You know, you spend money where you need to, and you spend money on the talent that you find. And, you know, who knows? This may be a good thing.
No, I, this whole project, Jeff, I mean, you've been with me since the Kickstarter started in 2020. You've been with me
since I left the Holiday Inn and you told me you're going to make a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know, because
I was about 4 years ago, actually, if you think about it.
Wow. Yeah, because in March 2020, yeah. We started the Kickstarter. So we got our initial investment. Then I was like, you know, I want to raise some money as well. And then you came in, you know, I tricked you into coming in as a business partner. And and I mean, I know you don't like to hear this because you don't want accolades, but this movie doesn't get done without you. And it was like, I mean, we built a friendship when I was a bartender and you were traveling to Burbank, and we connected. I made a damn playlist for you. Like, I was trying to court you just way before I thought about making the movie. But no, you really came aboard and you helped this person. He helped me so much, and we learned together. Like, me and you can now produce a movie together. We know exactly what it all takes, and we didn't know it.
No, let me correct you there. We know exactly what not to do.
What not to do? Yeah, that's true. But we did it together, and you know, we got a lot of help from Giles and a lot of help from just, you know, we're not dumb guys. We're pretty smart guys. Maybe some things we wish we could have done differently, but you know, you make your mistakes and you move on and you learn from them. But you coming on, I would never have been able to make this movie without you. And the amount of confidence you had in me from the beginning, and the amount of crap we went through, but you're just like, the one thing you said to me, and this always sticks with me, and you're like, I promised you we'd make this movie, and we're going to make this damn movie. You said that to me, and what I learned from my dad, all you have is your word. Once you know, and you gave me your word, and no matter how tough it's gotten, you've stepped it up, and I owe you so much. And you know, we'll get to that later when we get that bottle of Don Julio 1942 and we finally celebrate this thing when it's finished. But no, it's just, you know, the way you found Jim, like, it just, like, it, we've had, it just, things happen for this production. We've had the worst happen and the most amazing happen. And it's all come together. And now that we see the finish line finally, I'm just like, oh my God, this journey has been such a long journey, but it's worth it because, I mean, I've seen the film 1,000 times, but then when Greg and his team do the sound and the sound effects, you're like, I feel like I'm watching the movie for the first time. And then Jim comes in with his coloring. Oh my God, I'm watching a new movie. Like, you know, we've just seen like compressed internet video to take notes and all that. And now that we have it, it's just like, I am just so proud of it. And
yeah, it's really exciting because I got to cut you off. It's exciting because when you see the raw footage and you hear the dialogue, and actually I was on set for a couple of different takes. It's totally different. You look at it and you go, okay, I've seen this. I know what they're going to say, blah, blah, blah. And then when you see after all the work and all the editing and the color, and all that comes together and it starts getting more polished and refined. When we look at it again, we're like, wow, this is different. This is quality stuff. And that blows me away because, you know, I stood in that darn mansion on the hill.
The mansion. Oh.
And I know you went through the heat of the warehouse.
Oh God.
I wasn't there for that. But I was there and I was like, this is grueling. And the principal's house, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my mind over and over and over again. And you look at it and all these different takes and all the behind the scenes stuff that normal people don't see. And you're like, oh, I'm just so tired of this. But then when you see it finally in its final stages and it's, you know, like I said, it's polished and you're reviewing the footage and you're like, wow, this is so much different than I remember.
Yeah.
And this is really good and I like it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like when everyone ever wants to visit a set, it's not the funnest time. There's a lot of waiting. It could be very hot or cold. You're doing on numerous takes. You know, it's a different.
It's gotta kill you though, Brody, because you were involved with the script. You were involved with every single line and scene and all the emotions throughout the whole thing, mm-hmm. and you continue to see it over and over and over again. It's got to be killing your brain cells.
actors
go in and they do their scenes, and they're done,
and they leave, and they're gone.
You've been in it through day one through day whatever today is, and you've just been over and over and over yeah. again. So. I got a credit to you for not losing your sanity.
Well, there was a couple of times I did lose my shit, but you know what? If people know me, they know once I get it out of my system, I'm done. Move on. Let's go. It was different because, I mean, not only that, I mean, me and my wife, we were doing in Renato, who was, a character in the film. She was our COVID compliant officer. And she's my daily, like, going with me to set. I mean, we were doing craft services. We were bringing props. I mean, all those things that when you have money, you can have other people do. We were doing that every day, unloading the car every night and bring it, you know. And it was just, we were doing so many different jobs. But you know what? And being a lead in a film, and producing and people coming up between takes, oh, we have a problem with this. And it's just like, but you have to deal with it, you know? And it's just like, as an actor, you can't do that. You can't have all these distractions. However, I was prepared for it. I prepared myself for it. And I knew my character. I knew the script beforehand because I was involved in the process. So it made it a little easier. And to, you know, honestly, and to keep, I've always learned from like guys like George Clooney and guys like that who aren't assholes on the set, who just, you know, try to crack jokes and make the crew feel good. And I always checked in with everyone and I wanted to make sure everyone was doing okay. I embraced it and it was just so much fun. It was stressful, but you know what? I honestly, The only problem was when we had to like return the U-Haul after shooting for 10 hours, and then I had to learn like four scenes for the next day. That kind of thing. That kind of thing. I was like, okay, that's not happening again, because and lack of sleep and all that. But no, it just I believe in this project so much, and everyone who gave it their all, that I just, you know, you just keep going like an athlete. You just keep plugging away. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, it's been over a year since we finished shooting and, but you reflect on it and it's amazing because when you start seeing great footage and you start seeing it all come together, you kind of forget the rough days, the 105 degree warehouse where you lose 8 pounds.
Absolutely. And a remote. You know, I was not able to be on set all the time, and it, you know, some of it was nerve wracking, but we got through it.
Yeah, we did.
And the thing you mentioned earlier with, you know, sticking through it is you really gotta believe, and you gotta stick to your guns, and you gotta see it through. And for any listeners who are, you know, who want to think about going out and doing something different, which we all did in some respects, you got to believe and you got to stick to it. And it sounds a little bit corny, but when you actually do something like that and live through the experience, it really does make a difference. And as I told you, we're going to finish this film. And you I don't did. Know when that was. That was probably 2 years ago. I started saying that. But we're going to do it. And you know, like that, you can pick all your favorite sayings from hell or high water or whatever. But
right.
We've put so much into this, and so have others. And Giles has been amazing. He's been doing all this. He believes in it, and he's getting paid peanuts. But when you believe in it, it makes a big difference. And we're going to get through it, and it's going to get finished. And
We're almost there.
It's been an amazing journey.
It has, brother. And, you know, we're almost there. I mean, coloring's done. Giles has to do a couple little quick little edits, punch in things, nothing major. The dialogue and sound effects are done. We're just waiting for music. And then once music gets put in, then we'll find out if we have to do any ADR. From what I know now, we're not going to have to do much. It might be a few lines here and there. I know there's one line that I have to record in order just to for the plot purposes, not that the recording was bad. So very minor. Then the mix gets done, and then we just have what's outputs and put it all together, and we're done. And, you know, a little more technical things. We're probably looking at, you know, another month to be safe, but a lot of stuff's happening right now. Our composer, Chris, just texted me. He's halfway through the new revisions, the new notes. So he knows, like I told him, I said, listen, I said, do your thing. We want to get this done before Christmas, but don't rush your creative process because the music's so important. It's another character. And so he's been doing a bang up job. So we're getting there. So we're almost done. I just contacted my boy, Kurt. He is he used to come in when I bartended. He used to work for, I think, Stupid Buddy Productions or Cartoon Network, one of them. And he showed me, and this was, God, this was in 2020, I guess, or 2019. He showed me movie posters he's done, and they were unbelievable. I mean, he's a professional. So I contacted him. He got back to me today, and he's going to do our movie poster.
That's awesome because you're a movie poster kind of guy.
I've been buying movie posters since I was in high school. I am obsessed with movie posters. I haven't bought any recently, but my lovely wife got me a rare Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster that we'll put in our living room.
Very nice.
Yeah. It was a great Christmas present. I think it was a Christmas present. Was it a Christmas present last year? No, it was a birthday present. Oh, I can't remember.
It's not Christmas yet. Buddy. Oh yeah, it's not Christmas yet.
We're getting there. But like, I love movie posters. So I even talked. I even wanted to talk with you and John. I'm like, is it cool if I do the movie poster? So I got him to do it at a very good rate with his talent, and he's gonna make it for us. And I'm so excited. So I'm gonna get some. I'm picking the 6K high res pics from Jim this week coming up, and I'm going to get the layout. I'm going to have a Zoom meeting with Kurt to explain kind of what I want. And then I'm going to let him create and see what he does. And we should have a movie poster by the first of the year. And that's going to be fun to have because I'm all about movie posters.
Nostalgic.
Yeah, I'm a movie love poster now. But it's, you know, it's part of the whole process, and it's very exciting, man. And it's been a long journey.
It is. Let me give you a segue to that. So, you know, folks at home, there's a lot more to do. We've got to, you can produce, you can get the movie, and you can get it, you can get it cut to its final export, and it everything looks good, and it's got the, you know, it's got the opening credits and the rolling credits at the end and all that stuff. But there's so much more beyond that.
Yes.
You've got to, get distribution. You've got to figure out, you know, who your audience is. Where's it going to go? What's your media outlook going to be? Is it going to be, you know, is it going to be streaming service? Is it going to be DVD? Is it going to be in theaters, all that stuff. It's just, back in the old days, it just went to the movie theaters, yeah, right?
Or straight to VHS or DVD, no digital.
You know? Let me predate that, you know, back in the, you know, 60s or whatever.
60s.
There was no Blockbuster. No. There was no VHS, right? Correct. So it was pretty simple. But now you've got all these kind of distribution outlets, so to speak. You've got all the different media types. You've got the streaming. You still have the theaters, which are important, you know, for the big blockbuster films and all that. And there's a lot more to do. So your movie's done, you got to figure out what you're going to do with it next. And obviously we don't want this to sit on the shelf.
Hell no.
We want it to get out, you know, to the masses. And, you know, even YouTube and, you know, TikTok and all this other crap that's going on in the world. you know, I talk candidly, right?
Yeah, it's all good.
You know, we all know there's all kinds of different outlets to get this movie out, and so that's a big step. So we'll figure out, you know, what the best way to do it is, who we want to partner with, and get it all out there. It's not just about, you know, I'm going to press a bunch of DVDs in my basement and mail them to all my friends.
It's more than that. Yeah, because, you know, what we'll do is, once the film's finished, we're going to have like our own private screening. We can't call it a premiere because sometimes film festivals or something want your premiere. So we have to call it just a private screening or our cast and crew screening. But we're going to have, you know, important people there. And that looks to be, I'm thinking it's going to be early February to be safe. Because I know I'm going to have people flying in from the East Coast to come to it. So that looks to be when we're going to do it. And then, you know, we start arranging meetings. We start getting streaming services. You know, maybe we'll probably enter it in festivals and take it from there. It's kind of like, for me, I guess this is the fun part that I've been waiting for, is once we get it done and we have our private screening, and then that next chapter of who's going to distribute it, who wants to pick it up. I'm excited for that because we get to actually show everyone our film and see, like you talk about demographic, it's very true crime. We kind of know our audience, but it may be a different audience. It may be, you know, what platform would really want this? So that's the exciting part. And we're very confident and proud of what we did. And we know that it's going to be a great film for one of those platforms or whoever decides to want to partner with us. And I'm just looking forward to that opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, we're both kind of new to this whole, the end-to-end process thing. And,
right,
you know, the more we research, the more we Google, the more we find out how these things work. It's an amazing opportunity to be able to figure this all out and get it out there to where it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was slinging drinks, pouring your drinks, thought about making a movie, then decided, hey, I got an initial investor. Let's do this. Wrote the script, you know, and then COVID happened and it was like, we got a script, we got some money, we start casting, and then we can't go shooting yet because of all the COVID stuff, but our cast stayed with us. We had to recast a couple of roles, but to our benefit, the amazing Michelle Lukes and Austin Highsmith Garces, who, I mean, Michelle, I'm going to get her on the pod, a future pod. She played Detective Bullock, my partner. And she was awesome to work with. She was so
I think
amazing.
we should do a female pod. And so where I'm going with that is
I was gonna say, okay,
Michelle, you got Michelle, you've got Austin.
Oh, the great Amy Mata, Kate Smith.
Don't forget about Amy. Yeah.
Oh, Amy's
the great Amy. We don't want to lose her Time Life videos on the late night TV.
You know what, real quick. So when I got back this summer, and one of the reasons why we had to re-record a scene with her, or re-record, I'm like, what are we doing, a podcast? Refilm a day with her, because we recorded a certain scene. It didn't come out well, so we ended up doing it. And during that time, Jeff's like, Chili's like, dude, do you see Amy? basically Amy did a what was it, like a greatest hits of the 80s or something, one of those infomercials.
It was rock ballads of the 80s.
Rock ballads with the guy with REO Speedwagon
with Kevin, I can't remember his last name, Kevin from REO Speedwagon.
Yeah, and so
and I was in bed, I was trying to sleep, and no kidding, I woke up at like 2:10 a.m. And so the show must have started at 2 to 2:30, their 30-minute infomercial for Time Life. Who's done great things? They've
Freedom Rock, man, will turn it up.
If you've never seen one, the Time Life video series has been around forever, and they promote all kinds of good stuff. And this one happened to be on 80s, like, hair ballads, rock ballads. And I looked up at the screen about 2:10 in the morning, and I was like, I know that girl. That looks like Amy Mata, and she's with
Speedwagon. Well, it's funny, because what I was saying, Jeff, was when we shot, I mentioned it to her, and she was like, God, that was like 10 years ago. We started talking about it, and she was telling me stories about it. I'm like, oh, my God, it's hilarious.
Well, but then I couldn't go to sleep because I had to watch the rest of it. I had to find out, you know, what she had to say and what it was all about. And I knew they were promoting, you know, CDs or whatever. But that's just, you know, back to the thing of the connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Who's involved in this film? Where it's going? The people that we have, it's just incredible. And if I would have woken up and seen that, I would have just rolled over and went to sleep. And I was like, that's Amy Mata. And she was in our film.
Yeah. I mean,
cool.
I mean, you guys are going to always hear me say this, and being an actor for 20 years and being a part of some very good projects and very bad projects, this cast, I mean, we've had Charlie Farrell on, that speaks for itself, but I mean, the amount of work we had to do in casting was a lot. We had rounds and rounds of auditions, but we had a lot of talented people. And it was tough to make decisions, because I'm not going to mention her name, but the actress competing with Amy Mata for the Kate Smith role, I adore. And I loved her movies. And she's a kind of a well-known name. And I honestly wanted to go with her because I thought it would be better. I mean, I was like, not better for our film, but I was like, oh, this would be great. But then Amy's tape comes in, and I'm just like, holy crap. Amy just was the Kate Smith character.
So anyway, let's roll back. I think we should do a pod with
We do a Walmart Wallback crisis? Or
The women of Star City.
Ooh, I like that.
And kind of get into their minds a little bit, why they wanted to do these roles. And, you know, where they were at in their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Even the principal, which wasn't Elise Murtaugh was beautiful as a principal. It was not supposed to be a woman.
No,
originally
it was going to be a man.
But we came in and she nailed it.
Well, she auditioned for the doctor role, which went to Mindy Montalban. But Giles was like, Elise is so damn good. I'm like, I know. I'm like, she's almost too good for the role. It's like, what if we made the principal a woman instead of Geraldine Preston, and we casted Elise and changed it to a female role because she was so damn good. She's one of my favorites. Elise is, she is amazing. And, you know,
well, here's the thing with these one-time day actresses, I'll call them. We could have gotten anybody to do that, but mm-hmm. they read the script. They loved it. They loved you because you talked to them, and it's part of building that whole, you know, community that we talked about before.
Yeah,
and it was like, okay, this is a one day thing, and I believe she was coming in from vacation from New York or whatever.
Oh, that's right.
And she flew back to California last minute and had to sign paperwork and did the whole principal scene in one day. And then it was gone. I mean, she's not really gone, but That's the dedication and the commitment to this story that she was like, yeah. I mean, if it was me, I was like, I'm not flying cross country after my vacation to go do a, you know, one day part. Right. But she nailed it and it was awesome. Yeah. And,
at least stuck, you know, with us through COVID, through everything. She was like, I want this role. Cause she was like on a vacation and we had to schedule her and it wasn't working out. And she's like, and like you said, she did what she did. She goes, what about this day? I'm like, we can do that. Cause I wanted to keep her in. I did not want to recast her at all. So we made it work and she made it work. But it was just like the commitment, like you said, like over COVID, we had to push start dates for like a whole year. We pushed start dates and everyone.
And not one person said, no, I'm not going to do it because you didn't get back to me for 2 months.
Right. And I kept in contact with everyone, but everyone understood. And because I remember we did our table read over Zoom late 2020. We were hoping to shoot in November, but with the way the COVID was raging, we're just like, guys, we're going to have to push till next year. And everyone kind of understood, and they, you know, because, you know, the SAG requirements and all that stuff. And, you know, Tim Russ and everyone involved were like, it's okay.
Don't get me started about that SAG stuff.
Yeah, no. SAG. I love SAG. They do well, but man, they pushed us to the brink 2 days before shooting. But we won't talk about that. But we got it done, and our lady over at SAG, Tawanda Duck, did an amazing job for us, and she really made it happen for us. So thank you, Tawanda. This cast, I kind of want to wait till the movie sort of comes out, because those of you who have donated will get an advanced copy digitally of the film as the Kickstarter as we said on Kickstarter, we would do. So you're going to be able to see the film before anyone else. So that's a bonus. And then also, once the movie's done, we will do our props from the film raffle as well. And then those of you who have donated enough and are able to come to the premiere, you will have a seat plus one to the premiere as well. So that'll be fun. I'm sorry, not the premiere, the exclusive screening. That's what I'm going to call it. Exclusive screening, Chili. How does that sound?
I think exclusive is the key word there.
Yeah, because it's not a world premiere. It's not the New York premiere, the West Coast premiere. It's an exclusive screening. Right?
That's a good point. And more of my research that I've done is, we need to. We can have these screenings and these exclusive things, but the timing of release is very key.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just going to just say we're done and there it is. We're going to make sure that we, you know, time it properly, and like we mentioned before about the getting the management team in place for distribution. And to execute all that, to make sure that it comes out and it's just going to be a boom, a bang, right? We don't want this to come out the same time as, you know, the latest
Zac Efron movie. I don't even know.
Zac Efron.
I don't know.
What are you infatuated with?
No, he's a good looking dude. You know, I'd love to see him in Star City Murders, the series, you know?
No, obviously what I want to say is, you can tell movies are timed to come out at a certain time of the year,
right.
With a certain cast, with a certain theme. And they just don't, you don't come out with Expendables 4, you know, at the same time as a Samuel L. Jackson action thriller comes out. They do that on purpose.
Right.
They make sure that it's timed so that they don't compete with each other. So hopefully if we get the right, you know, agency involved in this whole distribution thing, this will be timed perfectly so that it comes out and it's something new and exciting and thrilling and grabs audiences. And whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter on the platform, whether it's movies or streaming or whatever, but it's going to be hopefully a point in time in the year where it grabs people's attention.
Sure.
And we have people, like you said, like Amy Mata and Tim Russ and people that have followings, and they're going to go, oh, I'm going to go watch this. And that's the exciting part, is we've timed it well enough that it says, yeah, I'm going to go watch this. I'm interested in this kind of a movie. And boom, we've got a hit.
Yeah. I mean, I hope you're right. No, but seriously, that's the plan involved. Whoever wants to distribute it, they'll be, you know, figure out when, you know, when it's going to be officially released. Those of you who have donated to the film will get an inside track, get to see the film privately, you know, before anyone else. But yeah, that's the whole process, and that's the next chapter. You know, once completion's done, we will definitely get a trailer going. So the things to be looking for in the new year, you know, you'll see our exclusive movie poster, and we will get a trailer as well done. And so those will be some next things that are coming. But also, all of you who are listening now will get to see the movie before anything else. So that's part of you.
In addition to that, we'll hopefully successfully time social media things so we can start attracting buzz. And you guys, the trailer can go out and start, you know, attracting the audience that we need for this.
Yeah, and just so you know, if you ever go to our IMDb page, the Star City Murders, the trailer that's up was the sizzle reel trailer that we shot for Kickstarter 3.5 years ago. So that's not the official trailer. So if you do see that, that is just something where I got some actors together, good friends of mine. We shot a little sizzle trailer to help us promote, to get funding, as you guys seen on Kickstarter. But that is not in our film. It's a whole new thing. So just keep that in mind.
Completely different.
As I'm trying to get that taken down, it's been a hassle, but because it comes up as official trailer, I'm like, that's not our official trailer. That was our sizzle reel for years ago.
I love IMDb, but it's very difficult to get things updated. And, you know, many of you probably don't follow them, but it actually said our movie was released this year. And that was just kind of like an automatic, you know, computerized thing saying, oh, well, looks like this film's done.
Because I don't know, because I know the trailer was up on YouTube, the concept trailer, the sizzle reel trailer we did. And then somehow it was put up on our IMDb page within the last few months, because I had an actress friend of mine who I did Unusual Suspects with, Tara Christopher. She's like, she emailed me. She goes, oh, I'm so excited about your new film. I love the trailer. I'm like, what trailer? And I looked and I go, no, that trailer is so old. That's not even close to what we did. Oh my God. And people
That trailer is not close. You'll love the new trailer, audience. Yeah. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. So.
Hey, we've got a few minutes left. Do you want to talk about anything else related to post as to, as opposed to, you want to talk a little bit about how the sound process works and how that integrates with the colorist and integrates with Giles and the end credits and the final, you know, tweaks before we actually export this to the real media that it's going to be?
Yeah, let's do that. And before we go, let's talk about, man, all the sound stuff that's going. So basically, what comes down to it, you record sound, and you know, while you're shooting. But then when you get to post, there's dogs barking, there's crickets at the electric owl, there's lines
airplanes.
There's all kind of things. So we had to get a sound editor that basically, where they fix the dialogue, they get it so you can hear it all at a level. They add sound effects, like perfect example, Chili plays the bartender in this film. And when I was looking at it, like when you're pouring a beer, like they added the sound of you pouring the beer, like little things like that, that you don't, it's amazing. And then
I have to stop you there. I have to stop you there. Okay. I'm sorry. When I was behind the bar, there's just some inside scoop, filming scoop, you know, behind the scenes. I clanked some glasses and I got yelled at by John. And I was like, okay, well, you know, now that I understand how things work, I'm not as offended. But the idea is it's motion and it's timing, but no sound, no dialogue with the customers at the bar, no clanking of glasses, no opening beers, no saying anything. And I was like, this is absurd. But now I realize, and I want the audience to realize too, that there's a reason for that. You need to get clear dialogue from the actors at the bar, and the sound editing at the end, which is, you know, amazing, just like the colorization, they will add that into the film. And there's a reason for that, is because you want the actors' dialogue to be clear and focused. And the stuff behind the scenes is peripheral, and it's important, but it's not as important as the actor's dialogue. So when you see me pouring fake drinks behind the bar, I want you to note that, okay, I was holding my breath and being as silent as possible because I didn't want to get yelled at by Giles.
And you're the money man of the film, and you're still getting yelled at.
But it's all good because the important thing is that when you put that in the dialogue and the right shots and the angles, the stuff, the noise behind the background, the sound is important to fill in, but it's not important when you're filming the scene.
Right.
So just to know that this is the importance of the sound editors, how they fill in the background and how they put the whole scene together, just like Jim did with the colorization,
right,
the bar scene look as natural as possible and blend in with the whole theme of the movie. So when you hear, you know, sometimes you can hear fake gunshots and whatever, but it's a whole separate process, and the reason for that is because you want that to blend in to the whole director's idea of how the movie should feel when you're watching it. And so back to you, Heath, about the sound process.
Yeah. You did such a great job explaining it. I don't know what more I can say. Yeah. But yeah, that's the whole deal. And so I knew we needed someone who could really help us with, because, you know, dialogue needs to be leveled out. There's times where it sounds low and you're like, what the hell? There's, like I said before, crickets and different things. And so Nick Simotas, who's one of our EPs, like I mentioned before, was originally going to direct the film, couldn't do it, was originally going to edit the film, couldn't do it. But he has been amazing at finding me great people. He found me Giles to direct it. He found me Aaron Wise to be our DP, our director of photography. And he found me one of the best teams to sound mix and fix this dialogue and add everything and bring it all together. And Greg Cathcart, who's worked on Bob's Burgers, a lot of stuff for Netflix, has a track record. They've known each other for 20 some odd years. So we went to Gordon Biersch one night and talked, and I was able to get him to do our film, and his team with Joey Bag of Donuts and Matt, they were able to fix all the dialogue, get it all level, add all the sound effects in. And now it's waiting for the music, and then they'll blend that in. And then we do our final mix, which then goes with Jim's coloring. And we have a completed film. Sounds simple, but it's not. They put a lot of hard work in. But you're right. It's just like the work they've done.
Yeah.
It's like when I heard the first 20 minutes this was like a month ago when they sent me the first 20 minutes. Like, we're at our first crime scene to begin the film. And I'm hearing like a helicopter go overhead. I'm hearing different things, like someone on their radio, like things like that, that you don't even think about. And I'm like, oh my God, it just makes it so amazing. And they've done a wonderful job. And again, we were blessed to have a team like that. And it's just those little things you don't, I mean, as a filmmaker, you think about, but until you hear it done and you hear it finished, you're like, oh my God, I forgot we needed that. And it just, and the bar scenes at the
and,
electric.
And you experience it, right?
Yeah.
For the first time. Yeah. Yeah. The fire engines going by.
Oh my God. I mean, we were shooting at one.
Amazing. Amazing. The electric owl. Oh. God bless their souls for letting us film there. Great location. Unbeknownst to me, at 1 a.m, there would be a fire station down the road getting calls. And so the fire engines would come by, traffic noise. And you know, it's okay if you can, you know, edit that stuff out, but it's kind of hard because you're trying to capture the dialogue of the actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, being new to this, the cut, nope, gotta wait. Fire engines go by. Okay, let's do this again. Same thing. And what you see on the film and then the final version, which all of us are familiar with, is it seems very seamless, but you don't know all of the different cuts and stuff that goes behind the scenes because you know, for some reason, the fire engines down the road had to come by the electric owl and ruin our whole take.
I know. Well, the electric owl's on Gardner and Sunset Boulevard. And so it's a busy street. But when we were shooting overnight, we're like, okay, there's no traffic. There's nothing. It's all good. And they have all this fire. And, oh, my God. And the people yelling, are you guys open? You know, like stuff like that. It's just like, you know, you don't anticipate, but the sound, it's amazing what sound editors can do, especially nowadays.
It was. So the interesting thing is you eliminate that and you have the sound editors come in and basically sound engineering.
Yeah,
and all the digital computerized stuff that they do, and it just cleans everything up, and you would never know the intersection that Heath was talking about, and all the traffic, and sirens, and everything else that was going on at the time.
And not to mention, we had to shoot there twice because our original McQueen, unfortunately, got injured and had to bow out of the film. And we had to recast, and the great Jason Graham he came in from New York and basically came for 2 weeks and shot the McQueen stuff. And that's a whole nother thing. I'm sure we've talked about it on the pod, but we had to push all the McQueen stuff to the end of the shoot, bring in a new actor. And that was part of the issues, the stuff we'd had to do, not to quote Kate Bush, but we had to run up that hill and figure things out. And so we had to shoot at the electric owl again. They let us shoot there and we were able to get things done. And that was our final day of shooting back in the summer of 2021. And we have to, when you come out for the premiere, we have to go to the electric owl and spend some money. And go back to the scene of the crime, Chili.
All right, as long as I don't have to clean up any debris that was left over.
So
that's an inside joke.
Yes, very inside joke. But what we're gonna do moving?
No,
forward,
we should go visit. You know, actually, I'd like to visit the two bar scenes. I didn't get to see the police station that would be an interesting, you know, kind of just drive by. And then the hospital scene was also kind of cool. And, you know, it, yeah, spoiler, it really wasn't a hospital, but,
well, Tierra de Sol,
nice facility.
Yeah. It looked like
a hospital, and let us, yes, let us come in and film there. And, you know, awesome to work with the management staff there. But, yeah, to go back and kind of, you know, show our appreciation for getting this thing done.
And then we're gonna have to go back to the Brass Monkey and sing some karaoke, spend some money there. We got a lot of places to go, Chili.
Yep. And, Jack was very receptive.
Jack and Christine.
I spent a day there in hell. No, sorry.
Well, they don't have AC, so.
They were great hosts.
Good. I mean, they're dear friends of our family. We're actually going on a cruise with them in March with my mom and dad to Mexico. But Jack and Christine Hansen, they, one of the early donors through the Kickstarter, they gave us.
I'm crashing that.
I know you should. You should come. You should go. Norwegian cruises. I'd probably get thrown overboard if I'm drinking with you on a cruise. But we'll have to do a Star City cruise once we get the movie sold. But no, the Hansons, they great friends, and they gave us their house for rehearsals when we had rehearsals. They were on vacation and they left me the key to do rehearsals. That's how amazing they are. We shot the principal interrogation scene there. And their daughter, Natalie Martinez, her home was Brody's apartment or Brody's house, which we shot there. And so, cheers to them. They, you know, the Hansons, great friends, but they also, they gave it their all to help out this production, and just two amazing people. And we love them. And they were just, all in all, it comes down to this. So many people like gave up so much to do this film and really helped us out. And, you know, I'm forever thankful. Thank you guys. Thank you, Kickstarter backers, and everyone who's contributed for Jeff Chili Mertz, our EP, to myself, Heath Sentazzo, actor, producer, and other things involved in this project. And to Axel Foley, hope you're doing well.
Jack of all trades,
right. We'll get a Women of Star City podcast going in the new year. But we'll get, you're still going to hear more pods. This one we're going to release to everyone, because I know it was a certain tier for these pods, but, you know, I'm going to release this to everyone so they can get caught up and see what's going on. But we're almost there. Home stretch time. Star City Murders almost done. And thanks again.